This is Mac for Math This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, we plot Apple's iPhone roadmap.
The App Store is going to be the exclusive way to distribute iPhone applications directly to every iPhone user. So we think this is pretty cool.
And MacFormat's Chris Finn tells us what's ahead for developers, enterprise users, and you.
Stephen Frank, a developer for Panic, said in his blog that the iPhone SDK is the perfect storm of genuinely great technology, brand momentum, and unexplored mobile computing territory. And I think he's got that exactly right.
The future of the iPhone, how to create your own widgets, and Q&A, all in this edition of MacFormat This Week. With the resources of MacFormat Magazine, this is MacFormat This Week. Hello again, everyone. I'm your host, Brad Gibson. It's been called the biggest announcement in the computer industry since Apple introduced the Macintosh in 1984. On the 6th of March, Apple unfolded its long-awaited roadmap with details of its iPhone software development kit. With a software development kit, or SDK, iPhone and iPod Touch users will start to see in June shareware and commercial software written by hundreds of software developers, much like we saw beginning back in the 80s and 90s with the Mac. We won't go into great detail of the SDK. Suffice to say, Apple has introduced a package of tools that will allow many developers to create simple to complex solutions surprisingly quick and easy. But for existing and potential iPhone and iPod Touch users, the real details are in how you'll get these applications. Well, unlike how you get shareware and commercial software today, either in a boxed product or on an online download, Apple will be controlling distribution through its online App Store. Apple CEO Steve Jobs.
This is an application we've written to deliver apps to the iPhone. And we're going to put it on every single iPhone with the next release of the software. So let's take a look inside the App Store. It's got the five buttons across the bottom. So we have a featured section, which is the ones we're featuring. Just added staff favorites. We've got categories here. If you want to find a game, if you want to find a business application, you want to find an application about finance, as an example, easy to find stuff and browse the different categories. Of course, we've got our top lists, our top downloads, top 50 in this case. And if I know what I want, I can easily search for something, in this case a backgammon game, and instantly find it. I can tap on it, get some screenshots, and get a write-up on it. And if I'm interested in using it, this one happens to be free, I just tap up there, and I tap the install button, and the app is wirelessly downloaded to the iPhone using the cell network or Wi-Fi. It's that simple. Now, we've also built a section into iTunes where you can peruse all the apps as well. And you can download them right to your computer, a PC or a Mac, and sideload them right into your iPhone as well. So this is pretty cool. But it goes even further. If you've downloaded an app and the developer has updated that app, the App Store will automatically tell you that there is an update available. And if you're interested, you just tap on the App Store, takes you to the update section, shows you the app that's been updated, you can see exactly what's been updated. If you like it, tap the update button, and your app will be replaced by the updated version again over the air, all automatically.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs. So what were some of the headlines from the Apple SDK announcement? Joining me to discuss those and tell you how all of these will impact you is MacFormat Deputy Editor Chris Finn. Chris, while the SDK was the nucleus of the news concerning the future of the iPhone and iPod Touch, there was so much more that really makes it the sum of the parts.
Okay, so Apple has released its SDK, and it's a great big package of stuff for developers to be able to build applications for the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And in fact, that whole mobile OS platform that Apple's now pushing. A few things to note. One, it's OS 10 only, the development kit, so you can only develop for the iPhone on a Mac. That's a good thing as far as I'm concerned, because it means that people will be forced to use a Mac, which will do two things. One, it will increase the sales of Macs, which is never bad, and two, it means that they're having to be exposed to the Mac UI. So it's not as if you'll be sitting there on a Windows computer trying to design something that looks good on an iPhone.
Right.
So that was what was announced. Apple also announced a new store for all this stuff. Apple will be the exclusive distributor for these applications that people create. You'll have to go through the App Store, it's being called. It works and looks a lot like like the iTunes Wi-Fi store that you see on your iPhone or your iPod Touch just now. You tap on it and it launches up the store. You can search through, you can browse, and there's highlighted and featured applications. But the whole thing won't be launched and rolled out finally until June, presumably to coincide with Apple's WWDC, their Worldwide Developer Conference.
Well, so much else has to happen between now and June anyway, Chris. I mean, you've got to have a new version of iTunes. You've got to have an update to the iPhone software, which I guess will be version 2.0 or something like that. You've got to build the store. You've got to get some apps moving so at least you've got some content. A lot has to happen between now and X date in June.
That's right. But the one really good thing about all this is that Apple developers, those people who are currently developing stuff for the Mac platform, they're ideally placed to roll out some apps really quickly. Most of them will know the frameworks, they'll know the APIs, they'll know all the programming hooks that they can take advantage of, and all it will be a case of them sort of learning what the new stuff that the iPhone can do, and so maybe taking a step back and thinking about the sorts of things they can do, because it's an entirely new sort of computing paradigm.
Now let's talk about some of those apps that were demoed at this keynote. Quite a few of them were developed in about 2 weeks from some major developers to give some examples of the power of this SDK. Talk about some of those demos.
They were really cool. I mean, we saw one from Apple itself, which had created this little app called Touch Fighter, which is basically a sort of Star Wars-esque flying in space, shooting at things sort of game. And it was really cool, not because of the firing mechanism, which was just tapping on the screen at any point, it would fire your lasers, but because of the control system. So instead of having a D-pad to control the movement of the spacecraft, you just used the accelerometer in the iPhone to tilt the iPhone and the whole thing moved around with you. So we saw that game from Apple. We also saw another cracking game, which as anybody who's ever thought about accelerometers and games and stuff for the iPhone, it would have been a natural choice, which is Sega's Super Monkey Ball, which is an app, a game that was out on Nintendo. I've got it on the DS, I've got it on my GameCube at home. Cracking little app where you sort of roll a ball around on various platforms. That's an absolute natural for the iPhone. It's on there as well. There's also a game called Spore that everyone's talking about. It's a really exciting game, and it's going to be available for a bunch of different platforms. And again, that was 2 weeks, and these guys had created a fully functioning little single, or rather two-level, I think, game, which looked fantastic. We also saw AOL on there, not, as you might expect, touting internet connectivity, but with a version of AOL Instant Messenger, which is very sweet. You just swipe to go between different chats with different people. But as well as that sort of consumer line of stuff, we also saw Apple, and I think this is quite deliberate, bringing up developers from markets which aren't traditionally Apple's target market. Mm-hmm. We saw the guys from Hippocrates come up with basically a glorified database for doctors, but we also saw somebody coming up demoing an iPhone front end for Salesforce.com. It's a huge, huge customer relationship manager application where people can track their customers, they can track if they're doing in advertising, they can track what leads they have, what they've still got to follow up on, how their budget's going for the year. And I think it's really interesting to see Apple deliberately inviting these guys up onto the stage, saying, look, the iPhone is being perceived currently as a consumer app, but it's got huge potential to be an enterprise device as well. And in fact, we saw, even before Steve Jobs started talking about the SDK, we saw Phil Schiller on stage talking about the new enterprise features that will be released alongside the SDK and the apps in June. Basically boils down to support for Exchange Server. So they've actually licensed ActiveSync from Microsoft. They've got Exchange Server on there. So I think we might see people like RIM, who make the BlackBerry, really coming under a bit of pressure from this little device. So it's a real cross-platform thing, consumer all the way up to enterprise.
Yeah, this is really a shot across the bow at the BlackBerry and AIM. I think the interesting thing, and let's just briefly talk about this for the enterprise, workers who now can use the iPhone with the Microsoft Exchange Server, they're going to be able to connect to a company's secure network, and the IT departments will be able to erase information stored on the iPhone remotely in case someone loses their device. And this really addresses many of the biggest concerns that I know businesses have about the gadget. And now it looks as though that Apple's doing a lot in the enterprise market to tackle some of these issues.
Absolutely. I mean, reading the blog of Jason Fried, who's a developer for 37 Signals, who makes some really cool little web-based applications, and on his blog posting, he says that what we saw today was the beginning of a 2 decades of mobile dominance by Apple. And I think that's entirely possible. I mean, Apple's got this huge momentum behind it. It's got a huge amount of brand cachet, but also it's got the end-to-end. I mean, BlackBerry, when it first came out, was an enterprise device. They've begun to move more consumer with things like the BlackBerry Pearl and the Curve, but they're still perceived, I think, as a fairly sort of business-centric sort of device. But if you look at something like the iPhone, it's coming out the other way, but moves, as you say, like the updated VPN stuff for the enterprise connectivity in iPhone 2.0, and as you say, the remote arrays, really makes this a very, very compelling device for enterprise as well.
Let's talk about the bad news here, and there are a couple of things that appear to be bad news or that we're not exactly sure. We're going to have to wait and see. And the first thing is the distribution method. Apple is going to be the gatekeeper here.
That's right. I mean, the App Store will be the one place that you can certainly legitimately get these applications from. You won't be able to sort of download them from a third-party developer site and then sort of install them on your iPhone in any way. You have to go through the App Store on your iPhone itself. Now, that's good in some ways. It's good because that's a huge shop window for these developers. And it's also good because people going to buy applications don't have to muck about with creating usernames, passwords, entering the credit card details, all that sort of stuff. That's all tied into your iTunes Store account, your Apple account, so that it can be a real impulse buy. You can just lift up your phone, you can click through, and you can see, oh, there's a really cool app. It's, you know, it's 99 cents or it's a couple of bucks, so I'm just going to hit go, and it's done for you. It downloads and it installs, and it's all lovely. It's a great distribution method as far as some people are concerned. However, the fact that Apple will be the gatekeeper and it'll be the only company that legally and legitimately allows you to get your apps for your iPhone from does mean that they've got a lot of power. It means that they can veto certain apps. It means that they can refuse to have certain apps on there. I mean, it's not all bad news. If you want to distribute an app for free, Apple will allow you to do that. They won't insist that you make it a paid-for app. But the potential for them to be a bit sneaky about what they do and don't allow on there. We've already seen from them that they won't allow stuff on there that's a bandwidth hog, that's pornography, that can compromise your privacy, and they're being particularly careful about allowing developers access to the mobile data networks as well, so that Jobs has said that sure, you can have a voice over IP, a VoIP application running on the iPhone, but it will only be available when you're on Wi-Fi, not when you're over Edge. So we've got to be very careful. I can't see Apple being quite so anti-competitive as to stop, let's say, the Amazon MP3 store, when it comes to the UK, being available on the iPhone. But there's a possibility they might.
Yeah, I mean, let's throw out some other possibilities here. I mean, what about a Slingbox mobile player or other streaming TV streaming application? I mean, would they stop something like that?
Yeah, you've got to ask yourself that question. And bear in mind that things like the existing functionality that Elgato builds into their ITV software, where you can stream programs from your Media Center Mac at home to your iPhone or your iPod Touch, that uses a web server. It's not an app.
Right. So comes through your web browser, right.
Exactly. That wouldn't fall under the aegis of these restrictions. And remember as well that you do have restrictions if you're an O2 customer, as you should be legitimately if you've bought an iPhone. O2 says you can't use continually streaming media
right.
on your phone when you're connected over the Edge network. Which is, I guess, you know, fair enough, because you don't want to absolutely cripple their network by hammering it for bandwidth.
Right. Another example, Harry McCracken of PC World wrote, a BitTorrent over cell client would likely be forbidden. But how about a BitTorrent over Wi-Fi one? That's an issue of bandwidth there, but would that be permitted?
Again, a legitimate question to ask. I think that Apple's going to be pretty lax about allowing stuff on there that's not actually illegal, as long as it's only using the Wi-Fi network. I don't have any information to support that. That's just that's the feeling I get from the development environment that they're proposing. I think they'll allow pretty much anything on the iPhone, as long as it's not actually illegal. But where you start getting contentious is when the developers want to get access to the Edge network as well. And that sort of connectivity, I think, will be restricted to some very, very top-tier developers.
Wrapping things up here, Chris, we've been talking about all these possibilities of development of software and what will happen in terms of the distribution and all these things. Let's put it into a big nutshell for the iPhone user. What will this mean in the end for iPhone users?
It means sort of three things, effectively. One is to do with what it means for Apple. This has a potential to be an absolutely huge, huge winner for Apple. Not because they're creaming 30% off every software sale, but because it will cement their position as an innovator, but as a market-dominating market force as well. It's got the potential to make Apple really huge. And that brings me on to my second point. The market for mobile phones is bigger than the market for PCs.
Mm-hmm.
There are more mobile phones iPhones than there are PCs. So that's a huge, huge potential for Apple to hit. And bear in mind that already, at least in the smartphone market, Apple is huge
right.
with the iPhone. It has an absolutely enormous slice of the pie. But all of that aside, and that's sort of industry stuff, but for the consumer, what does it mean? It means cool apps. It means some really, really great stuff to do in your iPhone or your iPod Touch. And the iPod Touch, I think, is going to get a real, real shot in the arm from this, as well as enterprise and as consumers look at it and go, my God, I can do this, this, and this. It's going to be a really, really cool time, and there's going to be some fantastic, fantastic applications developed that's going to really get people excited about the iPhone platform.
Do you think we're going to look back at this and say that indirectly this announcement really changed the face of desktop computing?
No, you're absolutely right. It will. And it will change the face of Apple as well. I mean, Apple's poised to really dominate this market. If you look at the stats, if you look at the sales figures, you look at the market share stuff in about, let's say, 3 years' time, you'll see that Apple has absolutely dominated this market. And it's a really, really exciting time.
3 years from now, heck, June is going to be really interesting to see when it gets here.
Yeah, that's right. But I think give it 3 years and we'll really see the fruits of all the hard work that Apple's put in. Steve Jobs knows fine well that mobile phones are getting more intelligent, that the iPod is becoming devalued as a brand. This is exactly the sort of development we need to inject fresh momentum and fresh interest into Apple's platform.
Chris, thanks so much for your input on this announcement.
My pleasure, Brad. Let's do this again sometime.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of MacFormat magazine. If you've got macOS X, then you know about widgets, little mini applications like a calendar or calculator or a weather forecast or sports score monitor. Some come with your Mac, others you download from the internet. But did you know you can create your own dashboard widgets without any programming? Contributor Cliff Joseph wrote a simple and easy-to-understand how-to in the April issue of MacFormat entitled Create Widgets with Safari 3, and he joins us right now to tell you how you can do it yourself. Cliff, thanks for joining us from East London.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
We should first tell people the system requirements that you're going to need to create these widgets. Tell us about that.
The thing that we mentioned in the magazine article that I wrote was that you need OS 10.4.11 in order to run Safari 3. Now, that's correct because Safari 3 won't run on anything below that. However, Apple's fixed it so that this particular feature, the web clips feature, will only run if you've got OS 10.5, which is the new Leopard. So even though you may have 10.4.11, which is running Safari 3, this feature won't work unless you've got Leopard.
Okay, so let's get right into this. Tell us how you can create widgets without any programming using Safari 3.
It's really very easy. All you have to do is navigate your way to any web page that you use a lot, whether it's the Mac Format website or Expedia, or in my case, the one that I tend to go to in idle moments is the Internet Movie Database, imdb.com. Once you've gotten to the website that you want to work with, if you look at the menu bar running across the top of the Safari window, you'll see there's the little row of icons. It's got the forward and backward navigation bars and the refresh button for refreshing the individual web pages. There's also a little icon that looks like a pair of scissors cutting a dotted line out on a page. Now just click on that icon.
Okay, I'm actually going to do this with you, by the way, so I can show people just how easy it is.
Okay.
So I'm clicking on that little pair of scissors icon.
Okay, and when you click on that scissors icon, a kind of grey transparent overlay covers the entire web page, and then you get a little, they call it a marquee, which is a selection tool, which is a little rectangle selection tool which you can move around the page, and then when it sits above the feature that you want to copy, it might be a search engine or a link to another web page or whatever, you can just click the add button and Safari will grab that chunk of the web page, lift it out of Safari and turn it into a widget that sits on dashboard. It's as easy as that.
Okay, so I've selected the area that I want, and at the top, in purple, it shows adjust the shape of the clip and then click Add. So now I'm going to click Add, and it's done, and then my Safari widgets automatically pop up, and it starts to load that clip that I created, right?
Yep, it's automatic. As soon as you click the Add button in Safari, everything else is automatic. So Safari lifts the information off the web page, opens up dashboard for you automatically, and there's your widget.
That is really cool. And it's so simple. Like you said, it's no programming. It's just basically copying a part of a web page that then is used and seen inside widgets.
The beauty of it is that it allows you to do this without any programming at all. All you have to do is point and click.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, now let's talk about some of your favorite widgets that you created with Safari 3.
Well, I've got, as I've already said, my Internet Movie Database widget, which I look at all the time to look stuff up. I was looking at it just the other night after watching, would you believe, Hello Dolly on Channel 4 the other night.
Right.
There's another one that I use a lot is the Guardian Film Reviews at guardian.co.uk because I like their film reviews. We can also do more useful things as well. I also have an Expedia widget, which I took off the expedia.co.uk website. And as I'm sure a lot of our readers will know, Expedia is a travel website.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you to book trains and hotels in other countries, get good prices. So you can create widgets from the Expedia website that will do all those things for you.
Those are three really great ideas. Let me throw out a couple that I just thought of that will be fantastic. And one of them I used as we were testing a minute ago, and that was the status window on Mac.com, which tells you the green or red status of mail and your iDisk, just so I know that the system is up and running if I ever run into any problems. So that basically is Mac.com for those of you using the Mac.com service. Another I thought of was web cameras, which would be really cool to use, and also comic strips from some websites where you can, you know, load a comic strip that changes every day. You could see that comic strip change every day.
Yep. You could even have a Mac format widget from the Mac format website. So we've got a little search engine on the website. So if you just turn the search engine on the Mac format homepage into a widget, you can search the entire website for all the latest news and reviews.
Now, one thing, these widgets are not linkable, so you can't like click on a link as you would if it was in a in Safari or in a web browser, right?
Sometimes you can. The example that I gave in the article in the magazine with the Internet Movie Database webpage, I did make a point of including some links. So they've got a section on their website that has the latest box office figures, which is just a link to another webpage, and I included that in the with the widget as well because I like to look up that sort of thing, being the sort of movie geek that I am.
So what you're saying is most all links, if there's a link there, it will use it?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the good things about it is you can create a widget that's got a link to lots of different web pages.
Now, Cliff, while you were talking, I actually created another widget from a link on a web page that was actually a link. So it opens it up as a widget. And although you don't get an active link like you would in Safari, like you said, it is a link that will work. And it automatically opens up in a Safari window.
Yep, that's correct. There's some things that are just too big to fit into a widget. So sometimes the web widget that you've created will transfer you back into a Safari web page.
So basically, these widgets that we're creating with Safari 3, what are they? I mean, are they RSS links or are we just copying and mirroring a web page?
What you're actually doing is you're copying a chunk of the HTML code, which is hypertext markup language, which is the code that programmers and designers use to create web pages. And that little scissors icon, what it does is when you place it over the web page, it isolates just that chunk of the web page and sucks out the HTML programming code inside that part of the page. So you're just getting one chunk of code, not the entire page, but just that one chunk of code that controls that particular feature that you want to turn into your widget.
Very cool. Cliff, thanks so much for this. This is simple for anybody to do, even for me, and I think this is really neat. Thanks for telling us about it.
Anytime.
Cliff Joseph is a contributing writer to MacFormat magazine. His how-to, entitled Create Widgets with Safari 3, appears on page 48 in the April issue of MacFormat magazine. There's a saying, knowledge is power. Now, if that's true, then we've got a powerful man in our midst by the name of Trevor Middleton, who joins us with questions and answers.
Brad, I have never been accused of having anything like power, but it's a nice thought, isn't it?
Yes, but there's another great saying that goes something like, one of the worst forms of ignorance is the assumption of knowledge.
Yes. Was that somehow aimed at... Have you been rehearsing that one?
No,
you've been rehearsing that one, haven't you?
No, I have not.
You've been
rehearsing
that one all morning, haven't you?
No, I haven't. No.
You've got a bloke with cue cards holding them up, haven't you? Yes, you have. Like Bob Hope. You've been practicing that little line all morning, haven't you?
That's not true.
I can tell. I can tell.
We've got to move on here. Before we get started, remember, you can always send us your questions for Trevor to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And always remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Let's get right into our first question. It's from Dr. Kevin Reynolds of Manchester. He wrote us, on a website I visit regularly, I once clicked, quote, never remember the password for this site, unquote, when prompted to save in a keychain. Now I'm fed up of having to re-input the password every time and want to change the setting so that the password is remembered and automatically entered. So, how do I do this? Trevor.
Right. Well, the simple answer to this is that you need to delete any cookies that the site might have left behind in Safari. As you probably know, cookies are small text files that store your preferences for a website, which is why some sites, for instance, will automatically greet you with your first name, or a site for a multinational company, for instance, remembers that you want to log on to the site of their UK-based subsidiary, or wherever you are, of course, after the first time you view it. Now, you can very simply delete cookies by going to Preferences in the Safari menu, then click on Security, followed by Show Cookies, and that'll bring up a list that allows you to select and delete any or all of your cookies. Once you've done that, the site will be set back to its original state before you ever accessed it. Simple one. Brad.
All right, question two comes to us from Brendan Carmel from Melbourne, Australia. He writes, I have an iPod Nano that I sync to an iMac at home for songs, photos, and podcasts. I now have a MacBook as well, and I want to be able to download and sync the same content from both machines. However, when I connect my iPod to my MacBook, it says it is synced with another machine and offers to erase the iPod. I know there's a way to do this, but I just can't remember how. Fill him in, Trevor.
Yes, you're right. There is a way of syncing an iPod with two Macs. In fact, there are a couple. First, you can choose to copy songs manually from your Macs to your iPod. And you can do this by clicking No very quickly when you're asked if you want to erase your iPod when you plug it into the second Mac. Then you go to iTunes, click on iPod Options, then on Manually Manage Songs and Playlists, which you then click OK to. Otherwise, there's a lovely little application called iPod Rip from thelittleappfactory.com, which will allow you to transfer the contents of your iPods to one of your Macs when you've synced it using the other one. That's quite simple to use as well. Brad.
And our final question is from Craig Lidiot of Manchester. He writes, my 20-inch iMac continually stops seeing the airport wireless network. The curious issue is that it can't be the base station, as my MacBook never has this problem. Currently, I'm having to restart the iMac and wait to see if it picks up the signal. Is there another way around this? Can you help?
Well, this could be a number of things, Craig. First of all, though airport and Wi-Fi in general is great on the whole, sometimes the surroundings you're in don't help. For instance, metal objects such as filing cabinets and heaters in close proximity to your iMac might block the signal, though you don't tell us where you've put your equipment exactly. If you do carry on having problems, though, I'd be tempted to reinstall macOS 10. And you can do this without deleting your settings if you choose the Archive and Install option from Installation Options when you do pop the macOS 10 installation disk into your Mac. Very often, a problem such as this is down to a corrupt kernel extension, and a system reinstallation will cure it. Brad.
Now, see, Trevor, you are very knowledgeable about these things, really.
Yeah, you go write your script for next time and rehearse it.
Trevor, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Cheers, Brad.
Remember, you can email us with your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And always remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Cliff Joseph, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakularopoulou. Join us again for our next edition on Monday, the 31st of March. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.